You're listening to the Igniting Souls podcast with Cary Oberbrunner, devoted to helping you become a soul on fire.
Hey, this is Cary Oberbrunner. Welcome to the Igniting Souls podcast. We are in episode 78 today, and we're talking about marriage. How to survive and thrive being married to an entrepreneur. All right, this is a personal interview with Joanne Miller. And whether you are married or you're single or you're empty nest, whatever the case, folks, it's relevant. And here's why. She's going to be teaching us how to create a haven of peace. Now, you might say, what in the world is a haven of peace? I didn't even know such a thing existed. Well, I'll tell you what, it does. And if you don't have a haven of peace as an entrepreneur, you are going to have a very short life because an entrepreneur's life can be a roller coaster. In fact, there's a book called that, The Entrepreneur's Roller Coaster, a good book. But here's the point. Entrepreneurship is up and down. It's a roller coaster, literally. You have dips, you have sways, you have, you know, exceptional climbs and then plummeting, whatever it's called. I don't know, plummeting falls. There you go. And as a result, it can be a wild ride. But that haven of peace is something that Joanne Miller has done for nearly half a century. I met her and Dan Miller years ago. And have spent time in their house. We even did an event together called Escaping Shawshank, where it was unbelievable. If you were there, you know what I'm talking about. We literally went to Shawshank Prison. We identified the walls and bars and cells and prisons that keep us back and hold us back. And Joanne came and was a brilliant speaker, challenged my mind. But they have been such a special family to me over the last few years and on my journey. And I said, Joanne, please come on the show and share with our listeners, because I get this a lot. Believe it or not, we have a lot of female clients, a lot of female listeners, and we have a lot of males as well. And what I know is that usually one spouse is more entrepreneur-minded, not always, but that creates some sparks. And sometimes the sparks are great. And if you're not careful, those sparks can be very negative. So this is Joanne's heart, and she's put a book together that talks on that topic. And I read through it and thought, oh my, this is chock full of not just inspiration, not just stories, but literal, practical, solid meat and potatoes, how to today shift that environment in your household, whether you have a dog, a cat, whether you have kids, whether you have grandkids, whether you have no kids. The point is this, you need a haven of peace, because if you don't have a haven of peace, you're going to be a statistic. So folks, buckle up for this exciting ride. And real quick before we do, many of you have emailed in, wrote in, whatever, sent smoke signals in, and you've said, Cary, what's going on with this Igniting Souls conference? Folks, we have now almost doubled our numbers from last year. This is a small conference on purpose. We don't like massive crowds and huge spectators sit there and just take notes. This is a interactive conference where you come, you meet the community around you. People become future business partners. People become co-speakers. I mean, we have seen fantastic relationships and partnerships start from our conference. It's hand-selected people like you who have a passion to be a soul on fire and ignite other souls. Folks, this theme this year is called Becoming Unhackable. And it is the most exciting thing I have done in years. What I do is I take a deep dive and I show you how from the very beginning of time, you were created to create. You were created to ideate, to dream. And what happens is most people in the world today, they have an idea, and then what happens is they get hacked. Like you think of computers and phones and other things getting hacked. What does that mean? It means somebody or something infiltrates the performance, infiltrates the productivity. It means it sabotages that thing, that person. Well, here's the point. Human minds can be hacked. And I take you on a deep dive and I show you from the beginning of time how when God did the first act of creation, he said, "Let there be light." Boom. It says, "And there was light." In other words, ideate, implement, ideation, implementation, no gap. And yet we know as humans, we go through life and we ideate and then we go try to implement and we get majorly hacked emotionally, financially, relationally, and there's a big problem. And we spin out and we stall out and we give up. We abdicate our best ideas because we think, I just can't do it. It's me. I'm the problem. I'm broke. No, you're not broke. You just don't know how to become unhackable yet. And so folks, people are coming from all over the world. We have Europe. We have New Zealand. We have Australia. We have Scotland. I mean, we have North America, South America, all over the place, Canada. It is exciting. And we have just a few tickets left. So I'm just going to say, if this piques your interest at all, go to ignitingsoulsconference.com. Trust me, you exchange 2 days of your life for a lifetime of learning how to become unhackable. This is the type of event where it's so practical, so applicable. You walk away that day with marching orders and you begin to see ROI, return on investment, immediately in your relationships and in your business, personally and professionally. So with no further ado, I am going to bring Joanne Miller on for a fantastic interview. I learned so much. I share a lot more than I'm used to about what happens in my home and our marriage with, me with Kelly. And it's just great. So if you kind of want that window, that peek in, and why am I doing this? Because a lot of our clients have wrote in and they said, how do you do this thing? How do you do this thing called marriage and entrepreneurship or grandparenting and entrepreneurship, whatever stage of life you are. And Joanne is a mom. She is a grandma. And she and Dan have been doing this for nearly half a century. So prepare to be inspired and equipped and empowered. Here we go. Hey, everybody. It is Carrie Oberbrunner. Welcome to the Igniting Souls podcast. I have with me, no joke, one of my favorite people in the whole world, her and her husband. But we only have her today, which is super cool because she looks better than Dan Miller anyway. So Joanne Miller, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Carrie. It's so great to be here.
Oh, yes. Well, a year ago, almost, you and I were in Shawshank Prison together doing time. Do you remember that?
Yes, we were. And I would do it again. It was an incredible experience. And even though I was there to be a speaker, I learned so much and got such great excitement on moving ahead with what I was doing with the book that we're going to talk about. So it was a great experience.
So true.
It was wonderful.
So true. Well, I'm the same way. You led us through some art things that messed with our brains and challenged our beliefs about how some of us aren't creative. And I'm with you. I gained so much myself from that. But I wanted to bring you back. I've gotten this question, believe it or not. I do have a lot of female clients that are involved in the different author programs or Your Secret Name or Deeper Path or Day Job to Dream Job, different programs that I do. And a lot of them have told me over the years, Carrie, first of all, how do you make it? How does your wife make it? Second of all, hey, I'm the entrepreneur in our house, the female speaking. And they've said, how do I make this thing happen and still be a great mom, still be a great grandmother if they're that age? But Joanne, we're here today. The theme is how to survive and thrive being married to an entrepreneur. And you, my friend, have written the bullseye book that kind of answers that question. What's the title of your book first?
It's called Creating a Haven of Peace. And the subtitle is When You're Feeling Down, Finances Are Flat and Tempers Are Rising. And I think that probably will speak to your audience today.
That is fun. I like that. That is a good title. Well, Joanne, let's get right into the content, because I love what you say in the beginning of the book. You kind of tell the why. You know, you say a message from Joanne and explain to us at the age of 19 what you decided you weren't going to do.
One of the main thing I wasn't going to do was emulate what I had seen in relationships, marriage, and home in my past. I was actually 17 when I met Dan. One very good piece of advice my mother gave me was, if you don't go to college for any other reason than to meet a good man, it's a good place to go. Mm-hmm. So that's what I went to college for in my mind. And I met Dan on the very first day at Ohio State University. And when we met, we first became friends, but we then quickly realized we both came from homes we were not too proud about as far as the relationships, the love that was shown or not shown, mm-hmm. Some abusiveness, various and sundry things that we both experienced. So at 19, when we got married, we drew a line in the sand and we said, you know, we have a choice here. We can either let our past define where we go to the future, or we can change that path and we can intentionally work towards having the relationships and the marriage and the life that we dream about. And so that's what we did at 19 and 20 years old. So that's paid off well, since we've been very happily married for 48 years.
Yeah. Well, I love that story for a lot of reasons, not to mention Ohio State, which is very close to where I live, and I'm a big fan.
Yes.
But I love what you say. You say creating a haven of peace doesn't take a lot of money. It doesn't take a beautiful new home or all the stuff we think we need to be happy. So you really believe, I mean, you're speaking to the lady or the guy today, and the guy's probably listening saying, gee, I got to share this. But you're speaking to someone who says, okay, Joanne's not going to, quote, tell us we need to go to Hawaii and book a flight and, you know, that's the answer. What is the answer? I mean, what do you think the answer is to rescuing, and for a lot of people, their marriage?
Well, we have a lot of pressure on us in this society to keep up with everybody else and have the biggest and the best and the finest and all of that. And Dan and I were not raised in that environment. Both of us in our individual environments were raised with poverty anyway. And so it wasn't like we felt like we had to have a big mansion. It didn't take a whole lot to please us, and still doesn't. And you've been to our home. And even though we certainly have a sanctuary here, in fact, we have a building on our property that we call the sanctuary, it's not grandiose. The sanctuary is actually a converted barn. It's just an old barn that we have made into our meeting area and my husband's office. But our home is less than 3,000 square feet. It is not a huge place, and it's an old farmhouse that we've added to, or actually not built onto, but changed a lot of the things that we wanted to have it make more of a home that we wanted. But yeah, it didn't take a whole lot of money to do that, because I'm the garage sale queen. I can really stretch a buck. And because I was raised that way and in that environment, it's something that I've always really hung on to. It doesn't take a lot of money to have a beautiful home. If you go to garage sales, go to Goodwill, go to thrift stores and consignment stores, things like that, you can make a lovely, lovely home environment without having a lot of money in the bank, which sometimes was the case.
Yeah.
In fact, probably more often than not, especially in those early years of living an entrepreneurial lifestyle, it's a roller coaster.
Mm. Well, and I've been to your house several times. I've been to the sanctuary, which is the actual thing you're talking about, where it's what did you call it? A converted old, what'd you call it?
It's an old barn. And, yeah. And right now we're changing some windows and putting some new siding on it because it's rotting out.
Okay.
It was an old barn. So it really, we didn't build a building and make a grandiose place to have our business functions or anything. Mm-hmm. We just converted a barn, and people seem to really, you know, it's interesting, Carrie, that so many people love coming here because it's so real.
Oh, yeah.
We are so with everybody and just share our lives in a way that is very honest to people. And that seems to be really refreshing to our family as well as our constituents, all the 48 Days community.
Oh yeah, definitely. So for the person who's never been there, the Haven of Peace, if you had to describe that, because you're right, a lot of entrepreneurs, they walk in off the street into their own homes, or you know, they're grabbing food as they're running out the door to a proposal, or you name it. It's not a place of peace. It's a place of stress. It's a place of stopping in and dashing out. What is it? What does a haven of peace mean?
Well, let me just say that it is intentional living. And it really takes that, Carrie, because we live in, as you said, a very chaotic and busy world. Mm-hmm. And many of us have gotten to the point where we almost think it's a badge of honor or a badge of success the busier we are.
Wow.
And we don't take time to really create that sanctuary. And that's, you know, I think of it in broader terms than just a physical place. It's a mindset.
Yes.
It's a place of asylum and immunity. And it's a place of comfort and love and peace that has unconditional love, so that when my family comes home, I don't have to have a huge mansion, a lovely environment that looks like it ought to be in Home and Garden magazine. I just need to have a place that they know they can come home to and be loved no matter what the day has brought. It's a place to escape from the everyday stressors of life.
Wow.
And I think that that's accomplished through intentional living. It does not just happen.
You are so right. And, you know, I'm going to get off this chat later on and give my wife a big hug, because after looking at your book and hearing you talk, I mean, that's what Kelly creates. And, mm-hmm. you know, Kelly's someone who's not seen by my clients a lot. She's not this, you know, whatever, co-speaker like me, but she is such a fantastic, I mean, when she leaves for a couple days, which is once in a great while, I'm a wreck with the kids without her. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yes.
I'm talking about the timing, the scheduling, the meal choices, the pace. You project who you are as a person upon your kids when you don't have that strong spouse next to you. And Joanne, I see you the same way. I mean, I was just on Facebook and you had massive amounts of kids and grandkids with you this past week, didn't you?
Oh my stars. We had a village here.
Yeah.
We had 23 people here, and that is counting all my kids and grandkids. And we had a delightful time this because our kids are kind of spread out. We have kids in Colorado. We have in Africa until recently in Costa Rica and then here in the Nashville area. But we all got together for a family reunion here for almost a week. And there were 23 of us, and it was extremely loud and chaotic at times. But oh, my stars, the memories and the laughter and the fun that we had was just astounding. And quite honestly, Carrie, it brought me to tears a couple of times to realize that the haven of peace that we have instilled here in our home has spread beyond these walls to our three children, their children, and on, through communities and friendships and so forth. And they are all so much embracing this creating a haven of peace lifestyle that was just, if I died tomorrow, I've done what I needed to do here on earth. And that's a good feeling. It's a very good feeling.
Oh yeah. Well, let's, I love this. And it was fun to watch on Facebook, the different pictures, even the little surprise, which we won't get into, but I guess a broken arm.
Yes. Yeah,
or something.
My 9-year-old granddaughter fell off of a slide at our neighbor's broke her last night. But you know what? She thinks it's really cool that she's got a purple cast. So,
that.
All is well that ends well.
I saw that. Well, good for you. Let's get really practical, because some people right now listening are at the end of the rope. Either they're on the edge of depression or divorce. And I know that you mentioned between the ages of 45 to 64, drug-related emergency department visits involving suicide attempts for that specific demographic have doubled in recent years. I mean, so this is not something that, Joanne's just writing a little book about. This is people may be on the edge, and this may be the last bit of a parachute that they have before they fall out of the plane. So talk to us. You say often being lost, you use this phrase, being lost can lead to divorce, being lost can lead to depression. What do you mean by being lost? What does that even mean?
Well, I think that sometimes we lose ourselves in what we're doing, and we're doing so much that we forget to be, and we forget who we are, and we forget our priorities. And there's so many things that you can put under that category.
Wow.
I know for me, for instance, and I can only use my own personal examples, I guess. I spent so many years being mom and wife, supportive spouse, that by the time my kids grew up and left home, I thought I had been downsized or fired from my job. It's like, wow, what do I do now? I don't have kids to mother. Wow. And that's true to a degree. It's just that you never stop being a mom. Believe me, I've learned that. Doesn't matter how old your kids get. But you don't have the same responsibilities. So what I found for myself is that I had new things inside me, voices inside me, things that needed to get out that I didn't realize. So I really have spent a lot of time in the last 20 years discovering more and more about me.
Wow.
And I think that what has happened through that is my own children and grandchildren have seen that process and are really making a concerted effort to make sure they don't lose sight of who they are in the process of being the best mom and being the best wife that they can be. That's important. It's extremely important to have somebody in the home. And going back to what you said earlier about Kelly, Kelly performs a function that has to be done in a home in order to make it run smoothly and to be that haven of peace.
And
it doesn't necessarily have to be the woman, although probably the large percentage is. There are men too who are taking care of children and taking care of the home, while the wife is more out there in the world bringing in the income. But somebody's got to do it. If you get married and you decide that you have children together, somebody's got to take care of those children. Somebody's got to take care of the schedule. Somebody's got to take care of the little things, cleaning the toilets, doing the laundry, wiping a bloody nose, whatever. Somebody's got to be in charge of that area of your life. And that is a career in itself. And I took that very seriously. And I think it's important in order to have a real peaceful home, that somebody's in charge of making that happen.
Yeah. Well, you are so right, and even people who are listening who are thinking, oh, so Carrie's this guy who just books all over the country. No, in fact, I don't. On purpose, I'm not gone that much from the home on purpose. But the other thing is, Joanne, after this interview that we have today, Fridays, I know you and Dan do something special Friday, and we can talk about that maybe, but Kelly does something special on Friday with her sister. So I know that after this interview, Kelly's going to go out with her sister. They're going to grab dinner. They're going to go shop and they're going to chat. They're going to have some time together. And it's my job to be with the kids. It's my job to hang out, watch them, et cetera. But then Kelly's also a counselor. And so on Mondays and half day Wednesdays, she has her clients. And so what I hear a lot of people today, there is no more traditional setting. You know, I mean, you got side businesses, you got, I'm not speaking to you particularly, but our listeners, some of them have side businesses, some of them are single, some of them are single with families, some of them have shared custody, some of them are divorced. I mean, there's a million scenarios, but what I hear you saying is the principles from your book can be applied to anyone, anywhere, regardless of their situation. Do you agree?
Yes, I think that that it's very possible to create a haven of peace no matter what your situation. And that's really the major point that I've tried to make in this book. It doesn't matter about your circumstances.
Yeah.
Those are important, and those things, your circumstances, regardless of what they are, and they are varied, I'm quite sure, those things are very important and do affect you in some form or fashion, but they don't have to dictate whether or not you have a house of peace and love and harmony. The thing that does dictate that more than anything is how you conduct your relationships. How do you respect one another? How do you act towards one another when you are at home? I had somebody ask me the other day, or tell me the other day that, well, when I'm at home, I just want to be able to be myself and let everything hang loose. Well, okay. I want to be comfortable in my home. I want to feel very much like I can be who I am. But who I am doesn't mean that I just tromp all over everybody else and be impolite or disrespectful or demanding and all of those kinds of things. So those are the things that I try to bring out in the book, that it's very important to recognize that you don't just be nice to other people, you be nice to your family. We have a motto that we practice being kind instead of right. And I think that goes, that's in our business as well as in our family and in with our friendships or anywhere. We practice being kind instead of always just being right and having to have my voice heard above everybody else.
I love that. That is so true. You know, some of us, we treat our clients the best. I mean, we have fantastic client skills. But what you are saying is exactly right. When it comes to the family, then we just turn everything off.
Yeah.
And we think they have to tolerate us or something. But
yes,
that's gold. That's a gold nugget right there. I love in your book how you say, with the excerpt, you say, this was perfect. Page 13, you say, decades of love bring on differing manifestations of love. They may not include all the tingles and butterflies and crescendos of orchestral or however you say it, music, but I challenge you to never forget why you fell in love with the one you love, because chances are the very reasons you did are often the very attributes that cause you to bristle and pull out your hair, if I had any, in frustration. And you say, funny how that happened. So that was... wow. I read that and I said, boom. So the same things that drew Kelly and I together, which were so great in the courting period, or for anybody listening, those are the things you're saying that can actually cause us the tension. What does that mean?
Well, I'll use Dan as an example. Since he's not sitting right here, I'll just rat him out here. I loved, right at the beginning, I loved Dan's wisdom, his ability to just make a decision and take control of a situation. Now, coming from a home where I never had a father, I didn't have a father in the home.
Sure.
I never knew that. That was not a part of my life ever growing up. So I admired that ability to just take control and make wise decisions and all of that, that I saw in Dan. However, having that on a day-to-day basis sometimes can get annoying. And I find that so true with everybody that I talk to. The very attributes that draw you to your spouse when you first met your spouse often are those little aggravating things that get under your skin later. Wow. There have been times when I didn't want Dan to take control. I don't want him to play the role of father. I want him to just put his hands or his arms around me, love me, and say, oh, I'm so sorry you're feeling the way you do. Mm-hmm. And so I'll tell you, we were on the radio together years ago on a live radio show every week for 2 hours. And Dan was known as the head and I was the heart. Well, guess who was, guess what usually happened in the course of that show, we would often get into it about something and really because I see things from a different perspective than he does. He's more factual and task oriented, and I'm so much more relationship and heart and emotional in my dealings. But the thing is, I'm not working to change Dan, nor is he working to change me.
Wow.
Working to make it our relationship be a win-win for both of us. And that sometimes means compromise. That sometimes means discussions, long discussions, sometimes heated discussions about how we want things to work so that it works. Mm. We don't want to make decisions that are ever going to harm our family or each other, our relationship with one another in the long term. So I think, again, going back to practice being kind rather than being right is an important concept to learn in whether you're dealing with a spouse or with your children or anybody else.
Love it. That is so good. And you talk about this thing. You mentioned humble pie. I've seen you mention this. I've seen Ashley yes. mention this, your daughter, Ashley. What does that mean? Because I love the lessons I'm learning. So I'm learning about respect, right? Because mm-hmm. Dan respects you as the heart. You respect him as the head. You're not trying to change each other. That's a big tip right there. But there's also this humble pie reference. What does that mean?
You know, Carrie, I think sometimes the hardest two words in the English language is to say, I'm sorry. And that has been really, really critical for me. It's something that I so admire in anybody, for them to say, wow, you're right, or I was, I don't know what I was thinking, I must have been on another planet, I am so sorry. And so Dan and I have done a lot of talking about that through the years, because quite honestly, he's had trouble with that issue. Mm-hmm. I think his strong high D, using the DISC profile terminology, personality makes that difficult. But sometimes that's all it takes to reconcile any kind of situation. We are all human. We all make mistakes. We all do things that we think are, you know, again, what were we thinking? Were we on a different planet? What was going on when I did this? So saying I'm sorry is a critical aspect. And I'll just give a real brief example of something that happened.
Oh, yeah.
Just a few years ago, and I wrote about this in the book, we were driving down the road and Dan said, there was a big black spot in the road where something had happened. And Dan said, oh boy, that was major roadkill. And we have a lot of deer and possum and stuff around here. So he figured it was something like that. And I said, no, I think there was a car that was on fire right here at that time, just a few days before. I don't know why, but for some reason I had it in my mind that was a car that had burned. Well, he said, no, I think it was roadkill. And I said, no, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that was a car that burned. And rather than continue to argue about it and prove who was right or who was wrong, he just said, well, maybe it was. And that was it. Nothing more was ever said about it.
Wow.
Well, a long time passed. We kept going past that same black spot. And one day it dawned on me, he was right. He was right on that. It was roadkill. I'm sure it was. I don't know what I was thinking. Now, this was a long time later. And Carrie, we're both in our 60s. We're not just young kids. They're still in our, we're in our 60s, and we've been married a long time. Sure. I could have easily never said another word about it, and because I knew he had forgotten about it. But I just felt really nudged. Maybe you can call it nudged by the Lord or my own conscience or whatever it was. I felt really nudged to say something to him about it. And I said, Dan, I owe you an apology. And he said, what for? And I said, because we had an argument or a conversation one time about a black spot that was in the road. Mm-hmm. And you swore that it was roadkill. And I swore that it was a car that had caught on fire. And I said, I think you were right. And I want to apologize for being so adamant that I was right.
Wow.
Now, what that did, Carrie, was it told him I cared enough to remember that and to be able to say, I'm sorry and eat humble pie when I didn't have to do that.
That's
but
true.
It's those little things and doing that consistently, owning up to if you've made a mistake or saying I'm sorry and recognizing to your spouse helps that spouse to recognize that you're working hard to maintain a very good relationship and you don't want there to be any disrespect between the two of you.
Wow.
I think it's highly important.
I love that. That, see, those are the stories that so practical. We've all been there, but we've not all eaten humble pie. Me included.
I will say that he did not have a clue what I was talking about. He did not remember the incident whatsoever.
But that's
but
okay.
Obviously I did. And he said, what was important in that? He says, it means a lot to me for you to just say, to go back and bring that up and apologize. That just spoke volumes to him. And it spoke volumes to me in knowing that, you know, I'm not too proud to say I'm sorry. And that's such an important, critical part of a good relationship.
Love it. And trust me, I watch you guys because I've been around you enough. I don't know if you remember this, but Dan and I were the exact same disc test. Do you remember when I came?
Yes.
And it was like a Nike swoosh, you know, where we are yes. Low S's and, high D's and you name it. So,
yeah.
So I watch you because I say, look, Kelly's wired like you. I'm wired like Dan, and you guys have made it work, and you're fantastic. And I feel that haven of peace every time I'm near you guys. So I say, what little lessons? And there's a big lesson. Here's another lesson that I've learned from you. Mm. Dan takes you to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Once a year, correct?
Yes, he does.
So A, that's important because I know that you think awesome things of the magical Christmas, but one time when you were headed there, so all I'm saying is husbands, study your wives. If something's important to them, even if it's a cost financially or a cost time or a cost emotionally, if it fills their tank, super important. But the other thing is when you were there, one of the times you say this in the book, you say, I wish the kids were here to see this.
Yes.
And what did Dan say?
Yeah. He said, can't you just enjoy it for us? Can you not do anything where you're thinking that you always want to have the kids there? That was, at first I got a little angry with him.
Sure.
But I thought about it and I thought, oh my gosh, he's so right. I was having a very difficult time letting go of always having to include the children in our lives. Mm-hmm. And we were in a new season where our children were grown and gone and on their own. And I needed to learn to just enjoy life again with just Dan. I think a lot of women at midlife go through that and have to deal with that in a way that sometimes breaks marriages apart.
Yeah.
I wanted so much for us to really enjoy this season in our lives. And quite honestly, Dan and I are quite close to 70 years old. Between 60 and 70 years, I think is a wonderful time. If you have intentionally worked on the relationships, especially your marriage in that in the years ahead prior to that. It's an incredible time. We have so much more freedom,
oh, yeah.
not just financially, but time-wise. And And we don't have to worry about anybody else in our lives. It's just the two of us right now. And yes, we're mother. Yes, we're grandparents to many, mother and father to three and their spouses, and have a thriving business. But on those off times, Dan and I are sitting at the table playing Skip-Bo or various other games,
right.
Chatting and enjoying life together in a way that we weren't able to in those earlier years. So it's a great time and it's a great season in life.
Oh, yeah. Well, I love that. And you do list a bunch of fantastic. So this book is not only inspirational, folks. This book is not only narrative about memoir stuff, but it's also meat and potatoes, practical application. Here's how today you can shift your haven of chaos, your place, your home that's maybe a bit chaotic, maybe a little bit nutso at times, maybe a little bit stressed, but how you can take steps. And Joanne, for the person who's here today, I know you list several. You list make time, work to regain romance, learn to touch, play games together, keep your sense of humor. You list so many good topics that go deep. But what's one that you kind of like that you think maybe the listeners could just say, oh, you know, there's a few things there that I could do.
You know, it's interesting. Of all of the different things that I talked about in that list, the thing that grabs me the most, because we just did this so much with all of the kids and family being here for those days that we just experienced, is playing games together. Every so often I run across people who say, I've never played games. Our family doesn't play games. We don't have time for that, I don't know how or whatever. And I always wonder, wow, they have missed out on such amazing opportunities. The kids, whenever we get together, the first thing they want to do is do something to make mom do her cry laugh. That's the big family. Because I will laugh so hard all of a sudden I'm just I'm in tears. And they think that's the most incredible thing. And we have some of the best memories with our entire family is all the games that we have done together where we have laughed and shared. And it's interesting. So often we'll be playing some game or another where we get into deep conversation because of something that game inspired in us. And there, I can't think of any better way to communicate together, to bond together, to laugh, to make memories than playing games together. I can't understand families who don't do that.
Wow. Well, we do that. Here's something that we do recently that may sound weird to a lot of people, but that's somehow what makes families work well together. We do a Little House on the Prairie episode regularly where we pop up popcorn, everybody grabs some seats, and then we watch it. But we also talk about it because our kids are 10, 8, and 6. Mm-hmm. So there's so many lessons that they pick up if you just ask them questions. So there's one, but I'm with you. We do play Uno Attack. That's kind of big in our house right now. And my littlest one, Addison, loves the Game of Life for some reason. She really likes that one. So I'm with you. It's these little moments that matter and playing games together. I love it. Let's go I got a couple more questions, and then let's just talk about the topic straight up. Let's just say that if I said to you, Joanne, quick tips, how to survive and thrive being married to an entrepreneur. We heard respect. We heard play games together. We heard eat humble pie. We heard, kind of rediscover this new season in your life. Apologies. What's one or two more things that you would say? Hey, Dan's ultra entrepreneur, and how did you not only survive it but thrive within it?
Well, one of the things that is really necessary if you're going to live an entrepreneurial lifestyle is to recognize that change is going to happen. I don't care how much you try to avoid it or how you're wired or whatever. Even in our society, in the lives that we live today, change is going to happen one way or another. And if you're an entrepreneur, it's going to happen more frequently than most. I know that Dan says that, my husband says that change is the only thing that opens the new adventures and opportunities. I've really embraced that. Sometimes that's the hardest thing to do for those of us like what you described with Kelly and with me. We're both wired high S's. I'm a high IS and Dan is a DC if you're looking at the DISC profile. So we're right. Total opposites of one another. That most people would often think that means that we're going to fight a lot. No, we don't. And I don't even like that word. Dan and I never fight. Yes, we have some intense arguments, but we don't fight. And I don't like that word because it sounds like violence to me. Mm-hmm. So I avoid it like the plague. But change is going to happen. And I think that Maya Angelou once said that if you don't like something, change it. If you can't change it, change your attitude. And I think that's what sometimes we have to do as the wife or the spouse of an entrepreneur is to change our attitude sometimes and how we look at that change. Mm. Because our children, we're going to look at us and their attitudes, their response to whatever change is happening, whether it be a new business, a new a move to another place, or whatever it might be, they're going to look to us as the role models in how to carry through that adventure. We like to look at our problems as opportunities for solutions, and the situations we get into ourselves into as adventures. So it's a mindset change, Carrie. I think more than anything, it's a matter of perspective. And I teach art classes and do a lot of art myself. And I know how important in art or in so many different careers is the concept of perception. And I think that our attitudes, our perception about how we deal with the entrepreneurial roller coaster and the changes that are inevitable is a key ingredient to whether or not we become successful or whether or not we look at failure. And so I would say dealing with change is a real issue. And that's why I did a whole chapter. I did a chapter called Change Isn't an Option. It's mm-hmm. a given. And I know John F. Kennedy once said, change is the law of life, and those who look only to the past or present are certain to miss the future. So I look at change now in a way, even though I'm a high S, and I would by nature be more resistant to change, I look at it as a great adventure. Yeah, sometimes it works, and yeah, sometimes it doesn't. But we've learned through all of the ups and downs through the years, and I relate some of those experiences in the Creating a Haven of Peace book. And
oh yeah,
it certainly wasn't all roses by any means, and I don't want to ever give that impression. But I think I was pretty real in this, and how just little changes, practicing kindness instead of being right, being one of those. Another mantra out of that is: if it matters to you, it matters to me. If it's important to you, it's important to me.
Mm.
And so those are kind of mottos that we live by in this family. And I think that those are the keys to helping us be successful, both in our family life, in our marriage, and in our business.
Well, I'll tell you what, this book is beautiful as a book itself. I mean, I'm looking at it, holding it in my hands right now. I love this image that says, a heart at peace gives life to the body. It's over your mm-hmm. one of the rooms in your house.
It's in the living room, yes, on the wall.
Yeah. And so, first of all, folks, this is a book that is beautiful, just like Joanne, because anything Joanne puts out is aesthetically pleasing because she's an artist. We didn't even get into that yet, but you are just tell us your website really quick, Joanne.
Joanne F. Miller, and that's Joanne, Joanne. It has an E on the end. And the F for my maiden name, Fairchild Miller, www.thebrainfarm.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if your audience goes to that, right on the front page, there's a banner that says
it's like five tips, five secrets, yes, for peace or something like that.
Creating a sense of peace. Yes. And you can click on that and you'll get a really beautiful little poster of how I use the five senses in creating a haven of peace in my home. And I think that would be helpful to your audience, but it's a pretty one to look at too. Our son designed it and I think he did a great job.
Oh yeah. And you already have dozens of reviews on Amazon and it just came out this month.
Yes.
So it's a hot book. I sent my tribe to it. I think you remember that. Like day one, I said,
yes,
look, you guys need this. Because I care about people and I want people, look, you know, if there's a book that's not going to help, I'm not going to recommend it. But if it's going to help, absolutely. So A, it's inspirational. B, it's practical. C, it's beautiful. But it works. And you've challenged my view on my relationship with my wife. You've challenged the way I view motherhood, husband, whatever you call it, husbandry, I don't know.
husbandhood.
Husbandhood, there you go. And I just love it. Our brand is Igniting Souls, our mission is, and I think it's a complete integration. It makes so much sense. You're so open. This isn't like, hey, Joanne's perfect little path and she's never struggled. You're open, you're honest. I think that authenticity draws people to you. Of course, your other book, Be Your Finest Art, is just one of many. You have a whole children's series. Joanne's got it going on, okay? Joanne, you said your age, not me, but look, if you think I'm too old and you're listening to this today, I'm dry, you know, I'm washed up, I'm dried up, I'm done, God can't use me. Look, Joanne and Dan, unlike a lot of people younger than them who've already given up, they're crushing it. They're innovating. I love it. I love your energy. I get tired around you because you keep me so fired up. So Joanne, any last words that you'd like to tell the audience, who maybe needs encouragement or whatever?
Well, we all live life in real time. And we all have circumstances that surround us every day, and some of them are very difficult. Something that put that into perspective for me was working in the women's prison and recognizing that, hey, I've got a story to tell, but boy, there are an awful lot of people out there with worse stories. And the issue here is, how do you portray your story? How do you think of that? Does your story define who you are? Or have you taken a chance and drawn a line in the sand and said, hey, my past isn't going to determine my future. I'm going to really do some intentional living to change my family tree. And that's what this book is all about. Don't just use the excuse that I'm too old or I had all of these horrible things happen to me in the past. You know, there's so much that can be gained by taking on a new perspective and rewriting your story. And I talk about that and did that in this Creating a Haven of Peace. And I think your audience will find it helpful in just helping them to gain a new perspective on life and their marriage and home. And that's what my desire is, to have everybody have that haven of peace that I've worked so hard to attain.
Love it. Well, Joanne, you, of course, over-delivered, gave us solid content, and I can't wait to see you and Dan again in person. I know we caught up, I think, last time in California, and then breakfast. Yeah, that was cool. And then, I love coming to the sanctuary, but I'm excited. I'm excited what this book's going to do for families and legacies, and just proud of all that you're doing. So thanks so much for coming and sharing with our crowd today.
You are so welcome, Carrie. I so enjoyed it, and I hope that it speaks volumes to your audience. And perhaps maybe next year I'll see you in prison again.
we might do that. You never know. Awesome. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.